Review, episode number 44. And we are here tonight with a very special guest, James Goddard. Now, I just want to say, this is a really nice coming together because last time we had this setup, it was myself, James, and Jason. I was actually debating with James, and now we're here on the same side as friends. So what a great show and what a wonderful turnaround. But before we get over to James, I'm going to do the usual bits and pieces before we start the show. Now, tonight we are live as ever on YouTube, but we are also live on RadioAlbion.com. Now, Radio Albion, it's run by Sven Longshanks. There's loads of great nationalist material on there every day. There are numerous shows. Please help support that and, you know, give him some thanks because being able to stream live on other platforms, not just YouTube, is something that's really great. And you never know when that might be the only platform we're streaming to because of the censorship. People may have noticed I put out a very hard-hitting video on Friday. Excellent video. It was one of the best I've done recently, actually, something I was quite proud of. Sometimes I do videos and I'm like, yeah, they're okay. But this one, I really thought I nailed some very important issues. And the video was doing great numbers, 24,000 views in less than 24 hours. Then all of a sudden, I got hit with an age restriction. And since then, I think it's only had about 6,000 views in 6 days. So it's gone from having 1,000 views an hour to 1,000 views a day. So that just tells you what's happening on this platform. And the amazing thing is, there's videos on this platform, like the trailer for the horrible show called Hunters, which is a very anti-white show. And that trailer features graphic images of torture, people having their genitals mutilated with a blowtorch. That's not in limited state. It's not locked behind an age gate. Anyone can see that trailer. There's sexually charged material. There's girls doing underwear try-ons and jumping about in their underwear. That's not behind an age gate. There's people doing adult humor. There's rap music with violent lyrics, using the N-word. That's not behind an age gate. There's adult comedy. There's all sorts on here. In fact, I could probably, through the course of this show, flag up hundreds of videos which feature things far worse than the little news snippets I had in my weekly video. And they can be watched by anyone. You don't have to sign in. You don't have to go through an age gate. They're available in all the searches. But my stuff, it's shadow banned, simply because I'm calling out the fake news media. So if you haven't seen that video, as I said, it's one of the best I've done recently. I was really, really happy with how it came out. I was really, really blown away with the response I was getting. And obviously, quite disappointed in the fact that such an important message is now being hidden. But maybe that's why it's being hidden, because it was an important message. Now, that's the little opening bit of news for what I've been up to. If you do enjoy these shows but don't get to watch them all, remember every week people write to me and say, Mark, I missed the show this week. I missed James Goddard this week. How can I see it? Why have you taken it down? Well, we take it down for obvious reasons, but they're all on BitChute. I do have a BitChute channel where all of my videos can be seen without having to go through an age gate, without having to sign in and find it in limited state. They're all there with the comments and the likes and everything enabled because it's a free speech platform. So please do make sure you have me subbed on BitChute. And if you don't get to see this show live, that's where the full back catalogue of not only all these shows are, but also all my videos in an uncensored fashion. So please support me over on BitChute. It's very important that we support these alternative platforms. And last Friday's shenanigans from YouTube is just another great example as to why we need BitChute and why we should support it. Now, if you like this show, if you like the work I'm doing, if you like my Friday videos, if you think what I'm doing is important, you can contribute to this show and you can contribute to my work by making a donation through Entropy. Now, Entropy is the free speech alternative to Super Chat. The link is in the description of the show. It is in the chat now. It's on my Telegram and it is on my Twitter. You can make donations there and you can also ask questions. The best questions get voted up and the best questions and all the donations get read out live on the show in the second hour. So if you would like to contribute, Entropy is a great way. If you can't contribute through Entropy, you can also contribute to me via Bitcoin. And if you can't contribute to me via Bitcoin, but want to send me a message or donate to me in another way, you can always write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I try to answer all emails within sort of 24 hours. That's my aim, except for at weekends when I'm usually busy with the family. But if it's on a weekday, I will always try to get back to you, unless, however, you just send me a link or it's a circular, then you probably won't get a reply, because I just don't reply to circulars or links without any context. Now, if you want to email me for help, though, email me there and I'll do my best to help you, give you some advice, or deal with any problems you may have that you think I might be of a help with. Anyway, that about wraps things up for the intro. So over to Jason. What have you been up to this week, my friend? Is there an after party? And if so, who is on tap?
Well, it's been an exciting week. It's wonderful to see everyone here today in the chat. What a bunch of heroes gathered here in the midst of the storm of pandemic and anti-white activities all around, certainly on YouTube, as Mark is pointing out. In fact, on my channel, the views have gone down over the course of just February by more than half. And I'm just, I doubt that that actually is taking place in the real world, something YouTube is doing. So make sure, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're still making videos over there. If you're not getting any alerts, it's not because we're not doing live streams and making videos. It's because YouTube is going out of their way to prevent you from knowing that they are happening. So make sure you get over there and have a look. We are getting tapped into an artist extraordinaire right after the show today, right after PWR. So 30 minutes after we finish here today, we are tapping into Donald Kent, also known as American Zarathustra, truly a grand talent and a participant, hero in the white positive sphere. He's going to be doing a lot more things. He's already done a lot of things, but we're going to be digging into his life and all that is going on there. Very excited to see James with us here today. It is a wonderful feeling to bring another person over to Going Free. And before we get any deeper into the 2 hours, I will pass it over to our leader, Mark Collett.
Well, thank you very much. And one other bit of news that I forgot to mention is Unwashed has been having some troubles. Apparently, he is in the YouTube gulag right now. So you can support him over at DLive, where he is indeed going free, free of Google and free of the YouTube censorship. So let's introduce James. Now, as you all know, I had a wonderful debate with James, and it was a very cordial debate, actually. We didn't actually argue on many issues, and we were very, very polite. Now, for a long time, the Tommy Robinson gang have been saying that I'm the trouble causer, I'm the bad one, I'm the one spoiling things, I'm the one that is very unwelcoming to people and puts people off. Yet every time I speak to somebody from the Tommy gang or who is associated with Tommy, it turns out I'm actually the polite one, and the person who speaks to me then gets completely chewed up, attacked, threatened by the Tommy gang. And I'm not threatening anyone. In fact, after I spoke to James, I paid his mother a visit, and not the way that the Tommy gang would have paid his mother a visit. I paid his mum a visit to drop off a gift for him on Boxing Day, because I actually believe in holding out our hands and welcoming people. I believe that people who are civic nationalists, people who are concerned about migration and Islam, can be brought over and talked to and have ethno-nationalist ideas discussed with them, and hopefully that will red pill them. And I believe in dialogue. I believe in a big tent. I believe in bringing people over and being welcoming. And I genuinely think that if we show our true colours, which is one of community, of friendship, of trying to build a shield wall that involves everyone who holds the interests of those of European descent at heart, we can do much better work. And one of the things that was a great, great start to this year was being in touch with James and making friends with him. And that's something I'm really proud of, because James isn't just a guy that I've debated. James isn't somebody who is just a content creator. I'm now proud to call him a friend. And James has been through the wars. He has been someone who has had a real baptism of fire. Because when James felt there was something wrong with modern society, James wasn't like many people. James wasn't one of those guys who sat in front of the TV complaining. He didn't just sit on internet forums talking about the problem. James was someone who got off his backside, went out on the street and made a noise. He tried to sound the alarm and he campaigned tirelessly. He's not a guy who grifted for money. He's not a guy that asked for donations. He's a man that went out there and put his neck on the line. And when I spoke to James, I believed I was talking to an honest man, a guy that had Britain's best interests at heart. Now, when we first talked, he might not have seen all of the problems, but now he's starting to see those too. So it is with great honor, it's a real privilege to have him here tonight, not as somebody as I'm debating, but as a friend. James, you're a man who's put your neck on the line. You're a man who's going on an amazing political journey. You're a man that I'm proud to call a friend. Please tell my audience a little bit about you, how we can contribute to your work. Tell us where we can find you, and then let's go into your story of how you came to be here tonight.
Okay, so firstly, let me just thank you for having me on this evening. So I've been looking forward to this since you invited me to come on. Yeah, since we had our first discussion back in December, it has been great getting to know you. And like you said, you even came to my mum's house to drop off a book for me. And unfortunately, I wasn't there at the time. So my work I put out on YouTube. I don't have Facebook, Twitter, PayPal, Patreon or anything like that. That was all taken away from me last year. So you can follow my work on YouTube. And my channel name is James Goddard. And I've also got a Telegram account as well, in the name of James Goddard, and my own website, which is www.jamesgoddard.org. I do need to start posting more articles onto there, but we've been a bit preoccupied of late with work and the ongoing court cases that I've got. So I just want to thank you as well for giving me that fantastic introduction. My political journey, my activism started 2 years ago in January 2018. I started creating online videos and they started to get some good views. I think they were averaging about 50 to 60,000. So I created a Facebook page and then it took off from there. I also met a lady called Tracy Blackwell, who'd informed me of the story of what happened to her son and his two friends who were deliberately mowed down and murdered. So I started to meet up with Tracy and we started to campaign on the streets about getting justice for the three children that had been murdered. And we were also campaigning in favour of Brexit and in general against the corrupt political class. And I suppose it all came to I suppose it got elevated out of control in December 2018. We'd attempted to get into the Houses of Parliament for Prime Minister's questions and they refused us entry. So we decided to block all the entrances to Parliament. And then out of nowhere, Anna Soubry came out and I remembered seeing her on national television, criticising Brexiteers, calling us all racist and the usual buzzwords that they use to try and stifle debate. So we had a little discussion with her. She called me English Defence League and I said she was on the side of Hitler. And that resulted in me getting a visit from the counter-terrorism police officers who turned up at my house on Christmas Eve to ask me to apologise. A couple of weeks prior to that, I'd had a Mohammedan from down at Speaker's Corner that had threatened to kill me and to rape my mum. And he got no further action. But they came round to my house for using a word. So we started the Yellow Vest protests as well. So when we went back to London, it was the first Monday back at Parliament and we were outside protesting. First of all, Owen Jones came stumbling by. So we went and approached him, tried to have a discussion with him. He didn't really want to talk for some reason. And then, Anna Soubry came out again. So I went over to approach her. She'd been on... I think it was LBC saying I was the type of person that beat my wife or girlfriend. So I thought we'll go over and have a discussion. I did make the mistake of the anti-Brexit campaign of Femi. I mistaken him for David Lammy, which didn't go down too well, but they do look very similar. That's like, if you know... then it just went out of control from there. They named me in the Houses of Parliament. There was a cabinet meeting where they brought my name up. I was then subsequently taken off of Facebook, Twitter, PayPal and Patreon. They put me as front page on the Daily Mail, front page of the Daily Mirror. And then there was on the hour news bulletins about me until they arrested me. And they arrested me for a racially aggravated public order offence because I told a Lithuanian police constable that he wasn't British, and also for the harassment of Anna Soubry. And yeah, from then it like I said, it went absolutely crazy. They completely banned me from London, which was the whole of the M25. I wasn't allowed inside there. They sent me back home to Leicester. So I went to go to my mum's house, and they made me move within 24 hours as the MP that I had approached, she lives in the same constituency as me. So I ended up in Manchester, and I've been here ever since. But I've had some, the police have done some rather peculiar and sinister things to me. They've doxed me. They've given my address out to the mainstream media. I had phone calls off them saying that they'd lost my paperwork and it had blew out of the window in the middle of January, and a member of the public handed it in. But on this paperwork, it had my date of birth, a picture of me, my address. So that was that. My mum was doxed, and when she reported it to the police told her that they weren't willing to do anything, and that she shouldn't worry about the account that doxed her because it didn't have as many followers as my Twitter account at the time. So yeah, the police haven't been very friendly. They also made my stepdad sign over his gun as well because they were concerned with me being in the house. But so they made him sign over his gun and then they kicked me out. And yeah, I've been up in Manchester ever since. And yeah, it's been an amazing journey. And then obviously we've been in touch since December. And yeah, I seem to have gone down another rabbit hole, and I'm on another journey now where I'm trying to absorb and learn as much as I can. And it's also making you question not everything that you've stood for before, but it's made me question certain things that I've done and certain people that I've associated and stood with, because now when you look at it, it's quite clear to see that these people don't have the interests of our people at heart, and ultimately they're following another country's agenda first whilst trying to mislead people, patriots, nationalists, whatever you want to label these people. So I have to thank you guys, especially over on this side, because you've been very very friendly and welcoming towards me, and all the labels that I'd heard about you, like, you're not nasty people, you're just genuinely concerned nationalists that have an open mind and question everything, and you don't just focus your attentions on one group of people. There's bigger issues at play, and that's something that that I admire about this side. And you truly believe in free speech. There's nobody that's whispering in your ear telling you that you can't say this or you can't say that. So yeah, like I said, it's been an interesting journey, and it's far from over yet.
Well, thank you. And before Jason asks you any questions, because he'll be up next, I just want to ask you this. When you first started out doing this, did you think that the state was so vehemently opposed to the rights of the Indigenous people? Or did you think that by protesting, did you think that by going outside Parliament and trying to get the attention of MPs, that they would actually listen? Did you think there was any hope to reform the current system? And what was the biggest sort of shock that made you realize how big the problem was? Because for a lot of people, and I've spoken to people before who've been out protesting, they think that it's going to wake people up and that it's going to be an even playing field. And one day they wake up and go to their PayPal and it's gone, and they're like, oh my God, it really is a conspiracy. Everyone really is against anyone that speaks out. But what were the big watershed moments for you? And I know this is a slightly different question, but you're currently scheduled for a court appearance for the most ludicrous thing imaginable. I mean, it really is insane what you're in court for next. But if you want to talk about any of those things and sort of the way it woke you up, and especially about this particular court case, because I think the audience here would really like to know just how insanely anti-free speech Britain is becoming.
Okay, yeah. So I'll start with the upcoming court case. So it goes back to last year. So obviously, I was arrested for supposedly harassing Anna Soubry. Now, at my first court hearing, it was March the 19th last year. It was quite a chaotic hearing, and we were outside waiting to go back into the court, and there was two journalists that had come from The Independent, which is a far leftist organisation, a terrible newspaper. I don't think they even print papers anymore. It's just an online publication. Now, one of the journalists, Lizzie Dearden, she'd attempted to gain entry into the court, and it was packed. She didn't have a press pass. Now, the security guards had told her, they said, sorry, you're not coming in, you don't have a press pass. And to which this, I said, you're not coming in. You haven't got a press pass. You're a scumbag. And that was it. Now, when I got back up to Manchester from appearing in court, they arrested me for breaching my bail conditions by going to court. So even though I had to go to court, if I didn't go to court, I'd be arrested. They arrested me for going to court. Now, I put a complaint in with the IPCC about my unlawful arrest. And as soon as I did that, a week later, they sent two Metropolitan Police officers up to arrest. Well, to it was a letter saying they would, if I didn't attend a voluntary interview, then they'd arrest me. So I went in for the interview, and yeah, they it was about hurty words to this journalist. Now, this is a journalist that has written about 15 or 16 different articles about me. Not all of them are factually correct, and she does, from what I can gather, she basically takes other articles from the internet and puts her own spin on it. So, yeah, I am being prosecuted now for a Section 5 public order for using threatening or abusive words or behaviour that could cause her alarm, harassment or distress. And because I'm already on a suspended sentence, I am worried that they could actually send me to prison. Now, this offence, well, alleged offence happened before I was given my suspended sentence. So I'd hope that they wouldn't activate a prison sentence. But, you know, I wouldn't say anything's for certain, because we can never trust the people that are in power, the law systems, because they are all fixed against us. And yeah, and in regards to what was the watershed moment when I realised, was the fact that we'd approached a politician outside of Parliament. We didn't place our hands on her. We didn't swear at her. We didn't abuse her. All we did was attempt to have a conversation with her. And it just went absolutely crazy. Now, I'd been down at Parliament every day. I'd been there from 10 in the morning till 6 at night. And I'd seen the way that the Remainers acted towards the politicians. Now, you've got one of the chief Remainer protests, a guy called Steve Bray. They were doorstopping Jacob Rees-Mogg and approaching him and putting stickers on his back, which if we'd have done that to Anna Soubry, it'd have been, there'd have been uproar. It'd have been far-right fascist assault politicians. So I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but I think people have to realise, especially the general population, that it is fixed against us, and the Indigenous population are the ones that are at real risk here. It's not, you know, the political class have caused these problems. They've imported this violent, rapey culture into our society, and ultimately it's us that are going to be affected by it. And like I said before, I sort of had a one-track mind. I was perhaps a bit too focused on Islam instead of the other issues that are plaguing our nation and our continent as a whole. So yeah, it's like I said, it was definitely a wake-up call. And I think the way that the media treated me and blew it out of proportion, really, because like I said, it was one of the biggest national news stories, and for what? For using a word against somebody. And yeah, it's like I said, it's been a really difficult but interesting journey, and I'm just hoping that this court case on the 3rd of April, the judge actually sees sense, really, because it's, you know, what sort of a country are we living in where you can't call somebody a word that's in the English dictionary? And if you actually look at the meaning of scumbag, it's an objectionable or deceptive person, which is exactly what this far-left journalist is, because she spins the narrative to suit her paymasters and ultimately their degenerate scumbag agenda, which is detrimental to us.
Is my mic on? Yeah, it looks like it. Well, James, I got to say that I'm impressed with you have the right instincts from the very beginning. You were concerned about whether you, I guess you were really aware of it or not. I guess ultimately it's our people. And that's really what happens with most of the folks who consider themselves nationalists or patriots. They start off conservatives, even they start off with this right sentiment. They know what they want in the world, what needs to be in the world, but they have this this nebulous notion about where exactly that thing comes from. And so you end up with really folks who are victimizers of our people, anti-whites, who are more than happy to provide them with a definition of where these things come from that is the exact opposite of where they originate. In other words, that they are just a set of ideals, an abstraction or two or 10 or what have you, rather than a people who bring these things forth. So we end up seeing this behavior out of these groups that seems so contradictory to their personal well-being, and that is that they continue to advance positions that ultimately undermine what they not only claim, but actually want to preserve and they care about, which is our culture, our identity, our separate hues in Western civilization, et cetera. And they use these convoluted, just tortured definitions and descriptions of how this can still be had if we can just still have this abstraction as the definition, as the source, because if we go beyond that, then we go into heresy against anti-whitism, and that we know is just is immoral, is so wrong. And you definitely had what we also call in Going For You had blindsight. So you were seeing some of these things, but you weren't quite clearly perfectly seeing them as they exist in the world. And I will tell you right now, you are getting closer and closer to this lucidity, to these epiphanic moments where you're going to say, ah, my God, for the first time, all of that makes perfect sense. And I've seen it so many times with nationalist patriots, conservatives. So when you are in this state, and this is going to be my question here, when you're in this state, and this is really because you are now you've gone from this state, or you're going through this state, this original state of this confusion about anti-white behavior, their motivations, who exactly are the victimizers, who exactly are the people destroying what you care about, because your inability, a person's inability in a conservative movement or any of those others, their inability to really be able to touch the victimizer, that drives them crazier than anything else in the world. The inability to say, okay, it's this group, they're anti-white, that's what matters. When it ends up being this haze around them, and they can't really figure out who is really good and who's really harming us. And sometimes this group kind of harms us sometimes, and sometimes that group sort of harms us, but then they're also sometimes good in some other ways. That makes it impossible to defend yourself. I mean, it's like trying to figure out good bacteria and bad bacteria in your gut. It just becomes just this impossible task. So there's a lot of confusion there. And then when you begin to discover what's really going on in the world, you begin what we refer to as going free, you move into a liminal state. And that's where I would say you are now. It's like this transition period where you're starting to have these like epiphanic moments, these realizations of well, things are starting to lock into place. They make more sense. And what I'm not asking for any specific examples of that, but as you are listening to folks such as ourselves, we're talking about going free or giving definitions of the world and what's happening and who really are the victimizers and how these things come together. As you're having this happen, and the reason why I ask you this question and to just to speak to it, like your emotions, how this feels for you, is because there are a lot of others who are going through it. And there are going to be a lot more who are going through the exact same thing as the world, as the anti-whites have created for us, is breaking down. So There's this real like emotional, I know there's an emotional resistance to following the truth, to the, you know, the destination that you can't deny, and knowing that you're going in a direction that you've been taught your whole life is immoral, is unethical, etc. It's immoral to ever care about the well-being of white children, immoral to ever care about Western civilization, etc. So what is it like emotionally for you? Because there are a lot of people going to be listening to this now and in the exact same boat, and folks who will be listening to this in replay who will say, that James guy, that's exactly what he's saying is what I'm feeling right now. How are you approaching this? How does it feel? You're seeing now that we are not the people that the anti-white narrative creates, these bad guys, these baddies in the anti-white narrative. How does this feel for you to be coming from a place of more confusion to a place of less confusion and yet some, I know there's some resistance. As you have these moments, if you could please speak to that emotionally, I think that would be of some real value to folks who are, as I say, in the exact same spot.
Yeah, so I guess it's cool. I think you just have to be completely honest. I'd say in regards to looking at things from a different angle and the way I've approached things over the years is now I feel really comfortable. I feel that I'm able to say the things that I should have been saying And I guess before, I wouldn't say it was fear, but it was, you don't, I suppose you always had to hold back a bit because you didn't want to, I suppose you didn't want to say something that you thought would alienate people. Because there's only, like, I'd say, I think to go back to it, like I've always had an interest in politics and current affairs going back from, I'd say, from the age of 8 or 9. I remember I attended a BNP meeting when I was 13, met Nick Griffin, got a badge and ended up being suspended from school for wearing that badge and kind of left it for a bit. Then when I had my daughter, it made me, I suppose, I wanted to ensure that I could do something so she knew that I tried to ensure that the country that she was going to grow up in was better than the country that we inherited. So I'd say that, being honest and not worrying about offending people and just following your heart, really, because I suppose before when, and you know, some people might not like this, but when you defend white rights or white people in general, you're automatically dubbed racist or a white supremacist. And the facts are this: look, you should be able to defend your race. You should be proud of your race, and you should be able to be, you know, to say, I'm proud of the British Empire. I'm proud of what our ancestors have done before us. Rather than, you know, toe the line and think, oh, well, you know, some of the things we did do was bad. We should own it, and we should be proud of what we are and who we are as a people. So emotionally, I'd say that I feel a lot better in myself since I've been able to speak more freely and look into things. Now, I've had influences in my life for the past 2 years that have been trying to put me onto this path and were really scratching their heads when they saw some of the activism that I did. And I suppose one of the biggest regrets I have is, and because I was taught this from the lady that got me involved in politics, was she never wanted me to walk around with an Israeli flag, and I truly understand why now. This is not being anti-Semitic or it, but I understand it's because it's not about Israeli nationalism, and I am going to clear this up because I do like it. It's about British nationalism, and ultimately we should be ensuring that we do our best for our own country. Like I don't have a problem with them. Whatever they want to do is fine, but we as British people should be focusing on our own country, because what benefit is it to walk around London with an Israeli flag or go on pro-Zionist demonstrations when it's not Israeli children that are being raped and murdered? It's not the Israelis that are suffering what we're suffering. And I guess to counter a lot of it, all we want is what Israel's got. We want a country where we remain the majority and where there's protections that are put in place to ensure that the indigenous population are looked after, which is exactly what's going on in Israel. If it's okay for Israel, then why isn't it okay for the countries of Europe? And I suppose that's the hypocrisy that I've seen on the right. Is, well, they're not even right wing, they're not even real conservative activists, really, because they're just liberals that don't like Islam. And it's okay for them, you know, they're quite happy to say, no, it's okay for Israel, but oh no, if you want to remain a majority in your own country, you know, you're a racist. And that's completely ludicrous. I mean, I've even got my mum and stepdad and my auntie onto demographics. They're a big fan of Mark anyway. My auntie's she's got his book, and she did tell me to tell you that. But I spoke to my mum last night, and I asked her the question. I said, Mum, do you want to become a minority in your own country? And she said, no, of course I don't. I was like, okay, so you're an ethno-nationalist then? And she was like, that's fine. Like, and it's not. So I think all these civic nationalists, and let's clear this up. Civic nationalists are people like the SNP and Plaid Cymru. So for all the people on the right that are saying that you're civic nationalist, you're basically in bed with Nicola Sturgeon, Alex Salmond, and the rest of these loony fake nationalists. So, yeah, sorry, I've gone on a bit there.
No, that was perfect. Mark, are you ready?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything else you want to sort of raise, James. I mean, I think we've talked about your the way you've been really, really hammered by the state, the way that you've found your way to us eventually, and also the sort of baptism of fire you've had and the way you've been treated so very unfairly. But is there anything else you want to raise? Are there any other personal recollections or stories that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, so I suppose I can't go into too much detail on this one because I don't want to end up in prison. But I would just say, so not only have like the state, the establishment, whatever you want to call them, they've really got involved in my life to try and screw it up, but they've also got involved in my daughter's life, so much to the point now where there's state reports about me, intelligence reports about me claiming that all of my far-right connections. So I just want people to, I suppose this is really for the critics that would be watching this. There's a lot of people out there that are quick to criticize people and quick to criticize, you know, the way that certain, you know, that I've probably done things in the past and moving forward. But what you have to understand is when you've been through so much and they've put you through so much, you've got that much, well, I won't say anger, well, the hostility towards the establishment. And I'm angry that I allowed myself to be led down the path, because back in September, I actually thought that Boris Johnson was going to do great things for this country. He was going to deliver Brexit. And it turns out that he's a fraud. So I suppose, yeah, just if people are going to get involved in activism, then they really need to be, they really need to make sure that it is definitely what they do want to do, because it does affect your life. You do have to sacrifice things, and ultimately, you know, you do lose things. So I'm in court next week for a 3-day trial for my daughter. And then two weeks after that, I'm in court for the offence of speaking to a journalist. And it's not only that, but it's the conditions that they put you under. So I, you know, I'm still on a suspended sentence. I still have community service. I still have these fines. And it really is, they really do anything to try and break you. So I think the best thing about all of this is gaining an even stronger community, because I will say this, and I do have to put this out for the public record as well. There's two regrets that I have from all of this. And that was attaching myself to the TR movement and the TR MEP campaign. That's the two things that I wish I hadn't have done, because everything that we did in London, our activism, the yellow vest, and blocking roads and stuff to do with, you know, approaching politicians, it was done by independent activists, and it wasn't, it was nothing to do with these people. So I guess the only regrets I have is from last year. But I suppose, you know, if I hadn't have done these things, it wouldn't have led me down the path that I'm at now. And I'm just glad that we had the chat in December, and we've got to know each other, and you've been very helpful along with Laura and the rest of everybody on this side. So I just want to thank everybody for being so welcoming, and let's keep the momentum going. And I think there'll be plenty of good times ahead for us all.
I wholeheartedly agree. So let's talk about the times ahead for us all. Let's talk about the big thing that's on the horizon. And that is the coronavirus. Today, it has been declared a pandemic. It has seen Italy in lockdown. It has seen, obviously, China in a similar lockdown a few months ago, although China seemed to have got a grip of the problem by aggressively quarantining huge, huge numbers of people. However, here in the UK, it seems as if the government aren't really that bothered about it. It seems the government aren't really concerned at all, because they seem to care more about globalization, open borders and GDP than they do about the welfare of the British people. And this is something which has become very apparent in the fact that they haven't stopped any flights coming into the UK. There hasn't been any quarantine. Life is going on at normal, but the infection rate is rising. Now, I actually do want to sort of debate this or throw out some ideas, because on one hand, I think there is a huge, huge dereliction of duty on the government's behalf. And I think the government, if this does spiral out of control and we end up with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or, you know, Lord forbid, even millions dying of the coronavirus here in the UK, the government would absolutely have those deaths on their hands. And I believe that Boris Johnson, the cabinet, and the people making legislation, the people in charge of whether we close the borders, whether we let flights in, those people would have however many deaths there is on their hands. Absolutely. However, there is also the other side of this. And I look at figures and people are saying, well, the death rate is around 3.4%. 60% of people who have already had the virus have recovered. For many people, it doesn't express itself in any way other than a bad cold or very mild flu, and most people just get over it. Then on the other hand, people say, well, if you're elderly and you get it, or if you've got underlying health issues, you're very likely to die. And what we might see here, if it really does take a hold in the UK and we see many deaths, the people who are likely to die of this are going to be elderly white people. If a million or more people died in the UK of coronavirus, it would be elderly white people, that age bracket, that part of our demographic structure would just be wiped out. And in some ways, the government may like that. Getting rid of those kind of people would reduce the number of pensions being claimed. It would reduce the burden on the state. So it's quite a complex topic to talk about. And the way people are responding to coronavirus also is quite interesting. Some people don't seem to care. None of the schools around where I live seem to have closed down. The London Underground is still open. The vast majority of large sporting events are still taking place. And at the same time, you have people bulk buying toilet paper. And it just seems bizarre. I mean, they're not bulk buying food, they're bulk buying toilet paper. So this is a really, really interesting topic. And it's something I'm not going to claim to have great understanding of, other than the fact that when the threat was first flagged up, we know exactly why Boris Johnson's government didn't act, because they are globalists, because they don't believe that anything should come above open borders, GDP, free movement and free trade. And ultimately, those are the gods. Those are the gods of the current political system. And above anything, those things will be put first, even if they're being put first above the safety of 66 to 70 million people who live on these islands. But what do you think about coronavirus, James? Are you concerned about it? Do you think the government have been negligent? Do you think the government would be happy if potentially hundreds of thousands of pensioners died?
Yeah, so I think, obviously, it seems our government was certainly slow to act. I mean, when it first broke, it was in Wuhan in China. They didn't attempt to stop any flights or stop anybody from traveling in and out of China to the United Kingdom. So it's almost, I mean, to me, I know when you talk about things like this, if you go too far into it, people will call you a conspiracy theorist or say that you've got your tin hat on. But I mean, all the symptoms of it just seem like a common cold. And like you said, the only people that that is really going to affect is people with asthma and the elderly. So I was a bit shocked with the way that the British government have reacted to it all. And then if we look at the reaction in Italy, where they've locked down the whole country. So for me, it just seems like it could be a test run for something, because once they've closed down society, I mean, how long is this going to be for? And it's actually quite scary as well, because they're talking about banning, you know, public gatherings. Well, I don't go much football matches anyway, but it seems like it's a trial run to taking away our rights and ultimately our liberties. And you know, they're telling people not to panic, yet you've got people buying bulk toilet rolls for some reason. You know, surely they'd be stocking up on food, but no, they're stocking up on toilet rolls. I probably should say this, if anybody does need any hand sanitizer, we've got that, and we are selling that at the minute. We've got 3,000 bottles of it, and it's not a rip-off price like these supermarkets or chemists. But no, I ultimately think it's being blown out of proportion. And like, if you look at what's going on with the stock markets as well, you know, could a wealthy group of people bet on a financial crisis? Then you know, we ultimately don't know. I suppose we just have to wait and see what happens, and hopefully it will resolve itself. But yeah, like you said, our government are globalists, so they certainly don't have our best interests at heart.
Well, there's quite a lot to say about coronavirus, what's going on today. Very well said, James, to the points that you were making, and Mark as well. I've been obvious for, well, for some maybe not so obvious, but perhaps some secret reasons, I've been paying close attention to what's been going on globally with coronavirus and keeping my eye on it. I also have a little bit of contact with some epidemiologists working on in labs and such. And the scenario I think that folks need to appreciate is that the governments of the world have a novel virus that they have to deal with. And the novel virus means that no one in the population, or virtually no one, is going to be immune because they've had it before or immune because of an inoculation. And as a consequence, if you could imagine just typical flu and imagine that no one has an immunity to it, no one has, no one could be inoculated to it. And now it hits a business, any business you can imagine, just say IBM headquarters. Well, everyone would come down. Well, also imagine too that this influenza is a many times more contagious than your typical influenza or your typical cold. And you know how easy that is to pick up. Now, so imagine that this influenza hits IBM headquarters. Everyone would be sick in the IBM headquarters overnight. And you would have people disappear for a week to 2 weeks, even 3 weeks from the illness. And the headquarters wouldn't be able to function. Now, imagine that happening at most headquarters. And imagine that happening at most hospitals, where the healthcare workers would come down with the flu and the death rate would be lower than it is for this virus, and they would be home. They wouldn't be able to work. Nobody would be able to take care of the patients. Imagine everybody in the hospital, people giving birth, people there for heart treatments or anything like that. They're catching that same flu virus because the nurses going from room to room are carrying it on them, carrying it in them, and spreading it everywhere. So you can see how they would like to have the disease inch its way into the population rather than have it land. And so that's why you see these wild quarantines. Now, there is certainly something to be said. For the incompetence factor, as we know, anti-whiteism is applied to society, and we have more people hired on the basis of their race rather than on the basis of their skill sets and their training, you have absolute incompetence. And as a consequence, you have a great many errors. It's good for us in a way because we're not being opposed by the anti-whites of the 1950s, which were a bright white community that could figure out everything that we could figure out. Now we have anti-whites increasingly composed of, and their organizations of morons. And so that's a wonderful thing. But of course, it means the wheels are falling off society at the same time. Now, I think that the anti-whites, they love that. And in fact, we've seen some articles and some tweets and things like this where the anti-whites are celebrating the fact that this is mostly deadly. In fact, 34% more deadly than flu for the elderly. And what our civilizations, our countries, our white demographic, a white population of our countries, largely composed of? It's composed of more elderly than it is composed of youth. Our youth are outbred. There are more Mohammeds. There are more Jamals. There are more, you know, than the names you see on the screen here before you. And so if they could just snap their fingers, the anti-whites, and get rid of that, a chunk of that chunk of white people, that would be fantastic for them, because these people are less anti-white than anti-white villainy signaling than they would like them to be. So I think this is something that they would like to have hit society. I think the economic downturn is a consequence of them trying to control the rate at which a novel virus infects a society so that you don't have entire businesses going out of business overnight and unable to function overnight. And they're doing it in an incompetent way because there are so many hired personnel that are just as dumb as some of our individuals who are running for president right now in the United States, Biden, and saying crazy things. But here's the thing that you have to, I just want to say, to keep yourself safe, and that's what everybody's most concerned about, keeping themselves safe. We did in the United States just today, a couple hours ago, entered a bear market. And that means, I believe, that we have gone 20%, we have fallen 20% from the last high in the market. So this is the opposite of a bull market. and 20% is significant. And it's a consequence, of course, mostly of fear when it comes to markets. And it's going to be on a larger scale than it is going to be for you personally, at least at present. So there definitely is going to be an economic effect that is going to hit you in a larger or smaller way, depending on what industry you're in. But what's most important is, can you get the goods that you need? Are you going to be able to go to a grocery store, get bread and this sort of thing? Yes. There's no indication right now that that's going to disappear. You should, to protect yourselves, you should absolutely be washing your hands regularly. Never touch your face, because out of everything that I've read, the way that the virus primarily spreads is not by the person breathing it onto you or coughing it onto you or sneezing it onto you, though it can spread that way. Because the virus is heavy, it'll travel about a meter to a meter and a half out of somebody's mouth when they cough or sneeze. And then it lands on a surface. You touch the surface. The virus can live, some estimates, of up to 2 weeks on the surface. You then touch your mouth, your nose, you touch your food. So you have to clean your hands, either washing and or sanitizing them. But this is the thing that's really scary and what's hitting our elderly, and where we really should be talking about this, which is what's important for us, is that this is entirely a consequence of anti-whiteism. And you can be under any of the rubrics that are within the anti-white pantheon of ideologies, ideas, open borders, this crony capitalism or criminal capitalism, whatever you want to call it. All of these different things fall under the main rubric of anti-whiteism. So what's going to happen is your parents, your grandparents may die. Other older people that you care about may die. Younger people that have health conditions may die, just as is the case with the regular influenza. But they're going to be dying because of anti-whiteism. They're going to be dying because of anti-white ideology. Steps could have been taken. Competent people could be in place. There could, if we didn't have an anti-white incompetent society, there could be a cure right now for this virus, even before it hit the world. White people could have figured this out, but we're too busy spending all of our time harmonizing the diversity, which is supposed to be such a great strength across the West. And yet we need to spend trillions in dollars and hours and IQ points and everything on making sure that everybody can get along. If we weren't having to spend so much of our energy, our time, our intelligence, our money on making sure that all of these disparate groups can get along in our businesses, at our universities, everywhere we go in life, our community centers, if we weren't spending so much time on that, maybe we could be curing disease. Maybe we could be finding ways on preventing disease from spreading from country to country. Maybe we could find ways that would make the impact of new disease or novel diseases easier to take in civilization. But we can't. And now your grandmother or your grandfather, the person you loved more than anyone on planet Earth, is 6 feet under in a pine box. And you're going to have somebody to blame for that. And it's going to be the anti-whites, if you have any sense. And you're going to take that passion and you're going to take the angst that you have right now over whether or not these people that you care about are going to die. And you're going to put it into the service of going free, of helping those around you go free, rather than just lamenting about things and being nervous about things that can't do you any good whatsoever. Because folks, know this. I was saying this weeks ago when this first came out. The anti-whites are going to be blaming you. And if you have to think about it this way, that when they blame the white race, they're blaming you. So I want you to say this. They're going to blame me. They're going to blame me. When the months that come, they're going to say that non-whites died around the world because of you, white man, because of you, white woman. That's who they're going to be blaming. And some of those excuses or reasons they're going to give for why you are responsible are going to be fairly reasonable, not outlandish at least. They're going to say, well, you didn't move quickly enough to stop in other countries. And so therefore, brown babies cried and died. You didn't move quickly enough, and therefore they died. All the way to the point that these anti-whites are going to say, you invented it in a laboratory in the United States or in the UK or in Canada, and then it somehow magically popped up someplace where people just happened to be eating raw bats that have the same disease in China. By the way, all of these pandemics, almost every single one, come from places like this where they're eating poisoned meats because they have palates that are just, in the past in Europe, when somebody ate something, when Phil said, hey, has anybody ever eaten that weird weed over there? And we all said no. And Phil said, well, I'm going to go have a bite. And then Phil dropped over dead. We then said, hey, nobody eat that weed anymore because we have sense. But for some reason in these sewers around the planet, they don't have any sense. So we say this all the time across the West. these diseases, this, et cetera, is going to be hitting our shores because the anti-whites have opened our countries to every sewer on planet Earth. And ladies and gentlemen, the sewers are pouring their sewage down into our lands now. All of these white lands, all of these pristine areas, all of these sheer white robes that we metaphorically wear are now stained in the diseases of these places that you would never even get close enough to look at firsthand, much less eat the same things. But these folks are now in your homes. They're in your communities. That's what you have to be thinking about. And here's the most disgusting thing. I want you to think about the elderly white people that are going to suffer something called and I'll pass this back after this, a cytokine storm. This is when the disease spreads so quickly in their lungs, and this is happening to people right now with this disease, that the body has an overreaction with the of the immune system, and their own immune systems eat their lungs out of their chests. They literally devour themselves. That is going to be happening and is already happening to our elderly, people who this would not be happening to if it weren't for anti-whiteism. Think about that monstrous activity when you think about whether or not you're going to get out on the streets with Mark and James and the rest passing out leaflets. And I pass it back.
Thank you. Now, before we move on to the super chats, I just want to point this out. And it's very important to look at things in the correct context. Now, I didn't know, but on average, 17,000 people per year in the UK die of flu. Now, that number might shock people because flu is something everyone's had. But flu is something you get over as a child, as an adult, as somebody who's healthy, as somebody who doesn't suffer from any autoimmune diseases. It's something that is really nasty or can be really nasty, leave you feeling terrible, but you do recover. Now, obviously, if you're elderly, obviously, if you suffer from respiratory problems, if you have a weak immune system, flu can kill you. Now, again, this might be a shock, but 17,000 a year is over 46 people a day, just over 46 people a day dying every day of flu here in the UK. Now, at the moment, six people have died of coronavirus. Now, obviously, I'm not diminishing the loss of the families, and I'm saying that if Boris Johnson and the government had acted properly and proportionately earlier on, those six people would still be alive. And I certainly don't want coronavirus here. But what I'm saying is, if 46 people are dying every day of flu in the UK, well, that's an average. It doesn't mean they exactly die, 46 like clockwork, but that's an average. If 17,000 people a year are dying of flu in the UK, as a yearly average, we have to take that into account. And I am very concerned about the coronavirus. I am concerned about the length China went to in order to prevent it. I'm concerned about the footage I've seen. And I'm also very eager to point out to the public that it's globalization, it's open borders, it's multiculturalism, which is putting us at risk. And they're all important things to remember. But equally, at the moment, I don't want to be that guy on a stream telling everybody that they're all going to die, that there's going to be millions of people dead, that this is the second coming of the Black Plague, only for 3 or 4 weeks down the line, that to be clipped out and people to be making a mockery of me. Because one thing that is quite prevalent in this movement and in sort of more radical movements is for people to predict the end of the world and to give a firm date for the end of the world. And then when the end of the world doesn't come, people are left with egg on their face. You know, when the spaceship doesn't come from the dark side of the moon to wreak havoc upon the people of Earth on December the 23rd, the guy who claimed that was going to happen looks even more of a fool than he did on December the 22nd. And as I say, I am very concerned about this. I've already made a video about this. I've said, in fact, that there is something gripping Britain which is far more deadly than coronavirus. And that thing is liberalism, because it's liberalism that let coronavirus in. But the fact of the matter is, I do not want to get into the habit of scaremongering. Everything that we talk about as nationalists is based on absolute fact. And the demographics we talk about, it's factual. When we talk about grooming gangs, it's factual. When we talk about anti-white racism, it's factual. Now, when we look at the coronavirus, there are good arguments why we should be very worried. There are also good arguments as to why we should act very responsibly, but we shouldn't start panicking just yet. And I'm urging everyone to be very responsible, but not to go into panic mode. But at the same time, say that this threat is only here because this government is negligent. And I think that's something that we should always bear in mind, that if the death toll doesn't go sky high, if this just fizzles out and it doesn't end up as bad here as it has in other countries, we still must always bear in mind that the only reason this is a threat at all is because Boris Johnson and his cronies in the government don't give a damn about us. All they care about is GDP. And they know that the biggest vector for coronavirus is going to be the London Underground. 5 million people a day use the London Underground. And that place is hot, it's sticky, it's humid, it's the perfect, everyone's crammed right in, breathing on each other, touching everything. Everyone else goes out, there's more people come in and touch the same things that have been touched. And every time you see condensation on the window, that's people's sweat, that's people's breath, that's people's bodily fluids gathering on the windows. And that's a grim thought. But the London Underground is not being shut down. Now, if you were actually in charge of a country, the first thing you'd say is, we need to shut down the Underground, because that's going to be a place which could, you know, two or three people infected on that, traveling on it two, three times a day, that could pass it on to thousands or tens of thousands. And they're not doing that. So again, we need to point the finger at the people who allowed this disease to our shores. And I remember, this is the last thing I'll say before we go to the question answers. I remember when Nigel Farage was on a BBC chat show and he suggested, was it BBC? It might have been BBC, something else. He suggested that people should be screened when coming to this country for deadly, incurable diseases like HIV. And people either laughed at him or they condemned him as a racist for saying that. Now, can you imagine how any other nation would perceive that? If you said to any other nation, you should screen people for deadly diseases so that people can't bring things into the nation that could kill the people living in that nation, everyone would nod their head in agreement. But you say that here in the West, and people act as if you've literally taken the form of Lucifer and are stood there in front of them carrying out a human sacrifice, when all you're really saying is, hey guys, how about we don't let people into the country that may well pass things to people in the country that's going to kill them? And that tells you just how cultish the people are who support and propagate multiculturalism. Anyway, let's move on to some super chats. And hopefully there's some good questions for all of us, but hopefully there's some specifically for James. Now, there's a very funny guy called Bob Carling who's been super chatting away tonight. So, Bob, thank you for your generosity. I'm going to try and read your super chats in the voice I think they deserve reading in. Hello, Bob Carling here. Just want to say that James is a traitor and should be supporting Tommy for when he goes to court. And Mark, please have John Bird on the show and ask him to take my photo off his video, thanks. So thank you there, Bob Carling. James, you should be chanting Tommy, Tommy, like a good tart.
Just to say that, I mean, I did have one nasty individual been messaging me a bit lately, and he actually said, why aren't you coming to support Tommy at court? I have my own court case, which is a day after, and yeah, I think they're all just a bit bitter, unfortunately. I think we are going to have to change the word Tommy Todd to Tommunist, though, because it probably won't be as triggered. I think I actually sent you the I sent you that on WhatsApp yesterday, didn't you? It is actually an accurate description. The Tommy Todds are delaying and impeding the nationalists' progress. So it's a, you know, it was an adequate description, but yeah.
Okay. William Harris gave $25. Thank you very much. And he said, thank you for all you do. Right reaction. That's our good friend Ralph gave £10. Thank you very much. And he said, how does James feel about his new home and about defending the nationalist policy positions?
So how do I feel about my new home? Very grateful, very happy, and very welcomed. And in regards to defending nationalist positions, I believe that it's not just the duty of one person, it's the duty of all of us. And I know the Groypers have been doing some fantastic online activism, which is really helping to build the momentum and also showing our argument in a positive light as well. Because I think what we have got to be careful of is the civic nationalists who are trying to portray us all as these nasty, horrible people, when in fact, we're not. We just want what's best for our country and our people. And for me, I can safely say this now. I can't actually believe I was shepherded into this civic nationalism, because it's rubbish. It's just left-wing nationalism, liberal nationalism, and basically saying the guy from Sudan can come over to the United Kingdom. We'll give him a passport. He's British, and that's not the case. So we should be, you know, all of us should be defending our people and our country. And that goes for the Greeks, that goes for the Italians, the Germans, the French, the Spanish. We should all be strong nationalist countries that are putting the interests of our people first. And we love Ralph. Ralph is a fantastic guy. He's been doing some. I just like listening to his voice because he's very hypnotic.
He does have like a hypnotic way of speaking, actually. He could do Ralph ASMR, where he speaks to people and they slowly just relax. He is very good at that. Eric Drave gave £4 and he said, what's your current opinion on the Zionist influence on our nationalist movement? Well, I'm going to just speak very briefly about this because I've spoken about this a lot. So I'm going to leave really Jason and James to answer this, but I think the Zionist influence on nationalism is actually starting to wane. I think more and more people are waking up to it. And I think the Zionists have this amazing way of overplaying their hand. They're just too confident. And I think the whole Shalom video documentary scam really did push a lot of people over the edge. And ever since then, I think that the whole Zionist control over the movement, I've never seen so much pushback against Tommy Robinson. Tommy didn't know what to do. He was in a bit of a meltdown. He was ranting into his camera in the front seat of his car, trying to look authentic, accusing me of not having children. And he'd obviously very angry because he didn't understand what he'd done wrong, but he'd overplayed his hand. Because I think whilst a lot of people were willing to turn a blind eye to the odd Israeli flag at a demo, they weren't willing to turn a blind eye to the fact that a documentary about hundreds of thousands of English girls being raped and sexually abused was then going to be replaced with a strange tale of a obviously mentally ill man who fabricated a load of nonsense. But because he was of a certain tribe, he needed a documentary. And I think that woke a lot of people up. And it really was the Zionists overplaying their hands. So, James, Jason, what do you think the current state of Zionist influence is in UK nationalism?
Who wants to go first? Do you want me or do you want to go first, Jason?
Go ahead, James.
Well, the state of Zionist influence, I did receive an email earlier from Ezra Levant. It was one of those group emails. So he's on his way over to cover one of the court cases for Tommy tomorrow. And of course, he's asked if we can cover his flight and his food and a few other things. So for me, I basically think that their influence is, it's not as strong as it used to be. Now, you've obviously got the TR side, which is pro-Zionist, counter-jihad movement. But other than that, I don't think they've really got any other influence anywhere else. And I think that, you know, British, real British nationalists, you know, are awake to it. Because for me, it seems to be, it's just very one-directional. It seems that we're being played and that our group of people, our community of people are being positioned to, we're the ones that have got to attack Islam, and we've basically got to do their bidding. And, you know, it shouldn't be like that. We should actually be looking at all religious minorities and questioning both of them and asking why it's the English people that are suffering because of the religious minority. So I don't think that their influence is going to be getting any stronger. I know, I think Hearts of Oak's very very Jewish influence from what I've been told. But yeah, no, I know Avi used to come over quite a bit to cover Tommy's cases, but I don't think he's been over for a while really either. So I think that's sort of starting to come down a bit. And like I said, real nationalism, authentic British nationalism is on the rise. And people, you know, I think people are sick and tired of putting another foreign country above their own country. And people, you know, are sick and tired of the issues that are taking place in our country. So why should we put so much focus onto a country that's in the Middle East? Like, we should be focusing on England, on Europe. And I guess what really woke me up to all of this, not only yourself, but I'm very close friends with Jade Franson. I remember telling me, you know, we put Britain first, then Europe, then the Commonwealth, and then Israel. And I think that's the way it's got to be. You know, we shouldn't be giving them preferential treatment, and we should, like I said, just be focusing on British nationalism. This will probably get a lot of hatred from a lot of the Zionists, but I'm not really fussed anymore. We can say these things without fear.
Well said. Well, I will say this. First of all, I would like to expedite your process of going free, James. So we will talk, and I will send you a free copy of Go Free, my workbook. You will see the world in a new light. And if anybody in the chat has been working on going free and you'd like to share a testimony with James, please do, as I'm speaking here briefly and or at any point in the rest of the show. But when it comes to the influence of Zionism or any anti-white endeavor, when relative to our different endeavors to serve our well-being, protect our children, etc., I agree with both of these fine gentlemen in that a lot of people are becoming aware, and in the past they weren't aware. It was much easier, not just of the something that could be defined as, I heard some feedback of myself coming through there for a moment, something that could be defined as Zionism, but the aware of their own interests. It's becoming increasingly difficult to tell a Brit or a German or an American that this thing that is clearly serving the interests of some other group is somehow magically serving the interests of our group as well. But there is still possibility for groups, anti-white groups, no matter what they call themselves, and it's really... I couldn't care less what they call themselves. To me, they're just anti-whites. And there are still plenty of opportunities for them to come in behind the scenes and press some leader into service, press some personality into service, press some ideology or party into their service. There are many ways they do this. The real world, the real jungle out there offers quite a few sources of motivation in both directions. So things like money to pay off your bills or make lawsuits go away, lawfare go away, all the way to the carrot, the wonderful thing, or the punishment at the other end, that you'll be thrown in jail, all of these sorts of things. So how do we protect ourselves against that? Very simple, the one master principle. So it doesn't matter whether it's me or whether it's Mark or whether it's James, no matter who it is, you like us and you like what we're doing as long as we are serving Western kind and what is good for our people. The moment we make a decision or run afoul or start going the opposite direction of what is good for our people, because remember, to serve the spirit of the West is to serve that which is good for us, that which is good for our people, period. If we keep our focus there, we can't go wrong. If we're all thinking about how do we get from here to there, we'll have disagreements, but we will arrive at the best solutions, and we will also prevent those who are behind the scenes from coming in and pressing who or whatever it may be into the service of their agenda. So keep that in mind. me, Mark, or anybody out there, if we start doing something that is contrary to the well-being of Western kind, then you immediately dislike us. You don't say, well, we've had a history of doing good things. No, you don't know what could happen. Everybody is mortal and human and is fallible. So one master principle, and then we will prevent folks like the Zionists and everybody else from taking control of our people and organizations. Pass it back to Mark.
Okay, we've got some more super chats from our friend Bob Carley. The first one, he gave £5. Thank you very much. I don't know if I can keep doing the accent, though. I think I've lost it. He said, yeah, mate, just watching that PWR. Get us some cans and I'll order the curry. Nice one, Bob. I'll have a tikka masala, please. Bob Carling then gave another £5. Thank you very much. And he said, damn, ignore that last message. Want for you, Tommy. I think he was trying to get Tommy around for a curry. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, one of the hardest red pills for me was realizing that our government weren't just incompetent with mass immigration. They were actually actively working against the indigenous people of the West. What were the hardest realizations for you? I'll start. The hardest realization for me wasn't that the government were working against us. It wasn't that the government and the police were covering things up. The hardest realization for me, and I think I've talked about this before, was that the public were so slow to want to act. The hardest pill for me to swallow was the apathy. And I've told this story before, so I'm not going to tell it again, but I went and knocked on people's doors once. I was trying to get them to come out and vote. It was election day. And I told the story of a guy I knocked on his door. He opened the door and he was like, oh, great, it's you. Oh, good luck, mate. I hope you get in. I said, oh, so you've been out to vote. He said, oh, no, I want you to get in, but I'm not going to go and vote for you. Well, why not? Because he was watching Coronation Street and he had a can of lager in his hand and he wanted me to win, but he couldn't even be bothered to go to the end of his street and vote for me. And I think that was the hardest realization for me, was that ultimately, there was so much against us, which I'd already accepted, and I accepted that freely because I very quickly came to the realization of what was happening. But the hardest thing for me to grasp was that when it was explained to people, they wouldn't do anything about it and they would just sit there and let it continue happening. I think that was the hard thing for me. What about you, James? What was the hardest thing for you to swallow?
I suppose a lot of people's attitudes sometimes. There's a lot of people that, especially I'd say from, I'd say my older friends, that not that I've met through this movement, people often, like you said at the start, people often talk about going out and doing something, but it's very, you know, there's a lot of people that will sit there in their armchairs, they'll moan about the world, and then they won't actually go out and do anything to change it. You know, you'll have people that will say, you know, I really want to change this. I want to change the country. I want to get involved in politics, but I don't vote. So it's all a learning curve, really. And I think we just have to keep encouraging people to become active. And this is something that's great that I've noticed in regards to you, Laura, and everybody else on this side. The amount of people that are, you know, that are active and that are actively doing stuff each day, whether that's calling into LBC or whether it's downvoting some of the anti-white videos that we're seeing. It's fantastic to see this community spirit. And I think you said that to me on the stream that you came on a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about how we have to continue building communities and networks.
Thank you. Jason, what was the hardest thing for you to accept?
The hardest thing for me to accept of the vagues out there and their excuses, or, well, yeah, I guess they're...
No. The question was one of the hardest red pills for me was realizing that our government weren't just incompetent with mass immigration. They were actually actively working against the indigenous people of the West. What were the hardest realizations for you? And I said, none of that was hard for me to realize and accept. The thing that was hard for me to accept personally was that people, when the problems were explained to them, were so unwilling to do anything about them. But was there anything for you, what realization was difficult for you to accept?
Well, I would say, you know, as an adult, nothing. I'm the same position as you have, and more along the same line of dealing with folks who are so apathetic they don't want to do anything in the interests of themselves. They can't put two and two together that their well-being is only going to be achieved by the way of our group's well-being. But as a child, when I was 11 and I started standing up for our people, and I realized that anti-whiteism, I wasn't calling it that at the time, but the ideology, I called them by the names they wanted to be called by because I was in error. I realized that it wasn't about helping or making things fair, or in fact, that it was purely targeted at harming us in every single way, shape, and form. That was a moment of actually, as an 11-year-old child, pure terror. And because I couldn't even fathom the scope and the power of those, I just knew that it was so grand. It was beyond what you could imagine would be on the top of Mount Olympus. So I think realizing that it was, when I was 11, that it was intended to, everything they do, intended to harm us, was the most difficult thing for me to accept.
Thank you. Alex May gave $10. Thank you very much. And just said, just wanted to say thank you and keep up the fantastic work. Great. Thank you very much. Bob Carling gave $3 and went, hello, Bob Carling here. I have to say that I was wrong about James. Fair play, Tommy. Thanks, Bob. For another, I got the voice right on that one. I got the voice right. It came back to me. ProScion Lotor gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, please check out Mr. Metica's coverage of Corona. He's been doing an amazing job of showing everything that the media and the World Health Organization have been hiding. Thank you very much. And yes, I definitely suggest checking out that. I've watched numerous streams about the coronavirus from both sides. And check out Mr. Metica's work and also support him a lot because he's an awesome guy and very, very funny. Daniel Lewis gave £30 and just said thank you. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the generous donation, Daniel. That's very kind of you. We've currently got a very funny poll going on Entropy at this point. So if you want to contribute or take part in the polls or ask questions, Entropy is the place to be. And the link is in the chat. It's in the Telegram. It's in the description of the show. And it's on my Twitter. And at the moment, we're asking, which do you prefer, Indian food or Chinese food? And Chinese food is winning at a ratio of 80% to 20%. So I'm in the Chinese food camp, I've got to say. I don't mind a curry, but I'm more of a Chinese man myself. When it comes to food, I'm not a Chinese man, obviously. David Marcus gave $25 and said, check out Event 201, where they ran a scenario for coronavirus pandemic in December 2019. Yes, that was something, which is a great coincidence. I will urge people to have a look into that. Sensum Comunum gave £50. Thank you very much. That's a very generous donation. And he said, never argue with Lamy Sarkar or AOC in the US. You're a racist no matter what, so say you're welcome. It's not nasty or offensive, but it will drive them nuts because they know what we mean. Thank you very much. Junta Momonari gave $3 and said the coronavirus put a temporary hold on Shinzo Abe's plan to bring in 100,000 plus skilled workers from Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, etc. to Japan. Too bad immigration never stops in Western countries. Mm. Indeed. And just for the record, guys, Indian food is now making a comeback and Chinese food is up 55% to 45%. So the curry fans are now storming the Entropy chat as we speak. Casual Cruising gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, you're a brave man with a heart in the right place, James. Welcome to the organic side. Please stop using WhatsApp, damn it. It's not safe, folks. Thank you very much. Yeah. Eric Drave gave £4. Thank you very much. And said, watch Vigilante Intelligence's Russia's role in the migrant crisis. Thank you, guys. Another stellar show. Thank you very much. Jez gave $10. And he said some stuff that I'm choosing not to read out. So thank you, Jez. He's a curry fan. And last time he came and had curry with me, he ate half of mine as well. Roy Danton gave $10 and said, how long do you think this corona thing will last? Will it be over in summer or are we in for the long run? I don't know whether we're in for the long run or when it'll be over by. I'm not sure. I must say China have done a very good job and getting it under control. But from my assessment, I think it will get steadily worse into April. And I think April, we will see it reach a peak at some point. But I would say from April, I'd say April and May will be both the peak and the worst of it. You'll see numbers peak around some point in April, and it will carry on through May. And I would say those 2 months are the months where you'll see the lockdowns, where you'll see the big changes. And I would suggest that things like international flights will probably by that time be almost completely shut down. And countries that don't have large outbreaks of corona will most likely not be accepting people from countries that do at that point, because I think we will know the true scale of things by then. I mean, at the moment, you've got to remember it's a 14-day incubation period. Some people have reported longer, 30-day incubation period, some people have reported. So that means whatever we've got now, we're always a step behind the curve. And essentially, we're not really going to know how bad things are in any 14-day period. And every time you get to the end of a 14, let's say we started breaking things down in 14-day periods, you would see the people starting to express symptoms at the end of that who had just been infected at the start of that. And then at the, you know, the next 14-day period, you would see the same. And I think when you start to see sort of a drop-off in new infections, that's when you'll know that it's either starting to level out or actually we're turning a corner. But at the moment, we're seeing more new infections per day than there really was on the previous day. And we should monitor it all very carefully. But I think by the end of summer, I think we'll be through it and it'll be gone. I don't think it'll continue into autumn. And what you've also got to remember is the colder it is and the more people are cooped up with recycled air and windows closed and radiators on, the worse the effects are of anything that's like flu or a cold. That's why people always get worse flus and colds in winter. And I think when we get to summer and the windows are open, things will be very, very different. So yeah, I hope that's a good answer to that question. So we're through the super chat. You can still donate if you want. The link is in there. That is, the link is, well, it's everywhere and it's in the chat again now. But we're going to go on to some questions. Ralph has asked a question as well as super chatting. And he said, for Mark and Jason, how can we use the corona pandemic to promote the nationalist message? Well, I've already spoken about that. James, Jason, please, you guys answer that, because I think I've already touched on that. But James, what do you think? How can we use the corona pandemic to promote the nationalist message?
Well, if the country is going to be locked down and nobody's going to be at work, then it gives us all plenty of time on our hands where we can be contacting family members, neighbours, and people in this movement, and keep informing them about ethno-nationalism and how beneficial it will be to us as a people. So I suppose we can highlight the inactions of the British government and prove once and for all that, you know, everybody that's put this blind faith in Boris Johnson, you know, you are being lied to, and it'd only be like a true true nationalist party that would protect the people. I mean, if this government, like you touched on earlier, if this government really did care about the people, then they'd have immediately stopped immigration into the country. You know, they'd have immediately stopped flights in and out from China. So I think that for us to take advantage of it, we should keep highlighting the failures of the political class, of our government, and of the services that are supposed to protect us. So yeah, you know, it's not our fault. It's the fault of the government. And we need to keep pushing that and highlighting the fact that, you know, the government, they don't care about us as citizens, as anything. They literally see us as a number to, like you say, to contribute towards GDP, really. And that's all it is. So, yeah, keep highlighting the failings of the government and tell as many people as possible.
That's very well said. I want to say also just very briefly that I think there's a possibility about when it comes to the virus that it could become endemic, and that the I don't know when it will taper off, but what essentially will probably happen is that the more virulent strain, if you will, that will kill people too quickly to be able to spread. So in other words, the one that will survive, the strain that will survive, will be the one that doesn't kill people right off, allows them to walk around and spread it to others. And it will continue to exist as one of the, I think there are four other of these coronaviruses that continue to exist on the globe, and they spread like influenza, but just not as broadly. I think it will probably settle into a position like that in the coming, I don't know how long it'll take before enough people die from the more virulent strain, who knows, and or measures taken by the governments. But when it comes to helping our friends, family, and relatives, this is an excellent time, because anything that shakes people's trust in the regime that they have put their faith in, they've given their loyalty to, anything that shakes their trust in that creates an opening for us, for anyone, to step in and say, we have something better. We have something that will make sense. We have something that will make you safe. This is particularly important when it comes to our women. Our women are regularly very easily used against us by the anti-white regime, by the anti-white elites. And they do so by playing upon their mothering instincts, their desire to be in an environment. It's much stronger in a woman than in a man that is very stable. And so when things become unstable, everyone gets nervous about that, but particularly our women. So they become receptive to arguments that they otherwise would not hear. So you can go to them and say, and this is the thing, ladies and gentlemen, and then I'll pass it back to Mark. We have to say repeatedly, we have to link the anti-whiteism and the trauma, the fear that they are feeling about loved ones dying, but also the fact that loved ones may become ill. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to just die by this to be really harmed by it. You can have esophageal scarring. You can have scarring through the trachea in the lungs. This can really cause other problems down the road. So you can survive this and yet, like in a war, be traumatized and never be the same for the rest of your life. So there is going to be a lot of angst about that. There's going to be a lot of concern and fear there about the instability. And we need to use this reality. This is not something that we're making up. This is not a fiction. This is a reality created by anti-whiteism. So we need to make sure that those folks out there whom we care about, all of our brothers and sisters, the vagues out there, that they know what's the cause of this. It is anti-whiteism. And it's anti-whiteism because by calling it anti-whiteism, it makes us a people that is being victimized. That is what our brothers and sisters out there need to understand, so that they can put together in their minds a thought chain that says, my personal safety, my personal stability is only achievable by way of our group's safety, our group's stability. You do that and we'll win over the most people that we possibly can during this time of trauma and uncertainty. And I pass it back, brother.
Okay, thank you. Mark Moore asked a very interesting question. I'm sure me and James will have more to say about this than Jason, unless Jason has seen this. Mark Moore asked, Mark, hi, what are your thoughts on the Riz Ahmed video, The Long Goodbye? Now, if you haven't seen this, this was a music video produced by somebody who used to be an actor and comedian called Riz Ahmed. And the video, again, very graphic, totally allowed on YouTube and not censored in any way, very telling, shows peaceful, family-orientated, really, really nice, down-to-earth Muslims being dragged out of their home and having terrible, terrible things done to them. In fact, being murdered by white racists who hate Muslims, who hate these Muslims. Now, this video was obviously very, very race-baity. It was there to suggest that Muslims are the great victims here in the UK. Now, the interesting thing about this is it was kind of produced in opposite world, because if you actually look which ethnic group kidnaps, traffics, and does terrible things to the other, we know that white people are the ones on the receiving end, and it is in fact overwhelmingly Muslim men doing this to young white girls. Yet Riz Ahmed makes this video where white men are dragging Muslims out of their homes and doing terrible things to them. And it just seems very, very strange. Now, this video came out and it got a huge number of dislikes. The dislikes were much, much greater than the likes. So they were disabled. And all the negative comments in the comment section were quickly removed. So this guy obviously knew just how unpopular this was. He knew that the reception to this was not going to be good. He's obviously done this to create a huge storm around himself, and the video went quite viral. And even though it went viral with a mainly negative reception, once he deleted the comments and removed the likes and dislikes so people couldn't see the ratio, it's obviously been quite a big hit for him. Now, I was obviously quite annoyed and a little bit disgusted by this on one hand, but on the other hand, I found it quite amusing, because when you saw the response from normal people of indigenous descent, should I say, are generally sick and tired of being told how evil they are, how terrible they are, how they're responsible for all the ills in the country. And I think a video that is that brazen, that carries that much of a sort of strong message, that really does implicate those of European descent as being wicked aggressors and not having any redeeming features. Like, occasionally you'll watch a video like that that's generally anti-white, but there'll be a white liberal or somebody in it that acts in a nice way. And so not all are terrible, but this video was kind of, they're all bad, they're all thugs, and Muslims are always the victims. I think it was so heavy-handed that most normies, had they seen that, would have disliked it. And I think the ratio wasn't just there because of us. It was there genuinely because the vast majority of people, or normal people who saw it, were absolutely disgusted. Only self-hating white liberals could have liked that video. It was so over the top. And it's exactly what we've talked about many times on this show, when we've said these people overplay their hand. James, what was your thoughts about the Riz Ahmed video?
So we actually covered this on a stream on Saturday night, and the video got taken down by YouTube. So if you look at the video, it's like they're portraying the savages as the noble people, as the peaceful, kind, loving people. And yet they're portraying us, white people, the indigenous people of this country, as this horrible, like, paramilitary group of lunatics that are going to go around rounding up peaceful Muslims from their house and shepherding them into the road and shooting them. And that couldn't be any further away from the truth. It's like everything that, like you said, if that was to happen, then it would be the other way around. It would be gangs of Muslims that would be rounding us up. It's not in our DNA. It's not what we're about. Whereas we know that these people, they do come from inherently violent cultures. But it's actually quite scary because, these videos are put out, and a lot of, I wouldn't say people that are awake to the problems. It's more like the general population that probably aren't awake that will use that stereotype. Oh, look, these nasty white extremists. And it couldn't be further away from the truth. The fact is that these people, they came over to this country. We were never asked. We were never, would you like immigration from the third world? And they've come over, they've raped, they've pillaged, and they've done their very best to destroy our way of life. And yet they're putting out videos like this where they portray us as these evil, nasty people, when it couldn't be any further away from the truth. They enjoy a very privileged life in this country. They enjoy a life where they're able to preach hatred towards us, where they're able to sit on their asses and claim benefits for multiple wives and multiple children. Yet at the same time, they can put these propaganda hit pieces out about us. But hopefully, I think that the people like Riz Ahmed, Ash Sarka, they should keep doing these videos, because ultimately it's given us everything that we need to combat these people and dismiss their ideas. Like, I know it's a bit off subject, but the Ash Sarka thing, like, she's come out and openly said, the white population's gone down, the ethnic population's increased. We're winning. And for us, that gives us all the ammunition we need, because, like you said, it enables more normal people to start talking about it. But yeah, if anybody's not watched Riz Ahmed's video, you need to go and have a look at it, because it's just ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, and it's an insult to people like us that they think they can put these videos out there and attempt to sway people.
Have you seen this video?
I saw portions of it, and the thing is I agree with the both of you. I would add this. What's good about videos like this, and I think they should make it, this is a good thing, when they make videos like this that is an absolute inversion of reality, it makes it much easier for us to help our brothers and sisters to go free. When they make TV series like Hunters, and they make this movie, The Hunt, and where it's anti-whites are roaming the landscape, killing all white people who are heretical to anti-whiteism. And we see this increasingly, this contradiction with reality and the hubris of anti-whites now having come to so much power and dominance in our civilization. They can't be pretended anymore. And I know this is something that the anti-white elites find very frustrating. They need the anti-white narrative where the white male is dominating all of society. He's exploiting all of society for the benefit of the white race. They need that narrative to remain in place. Because if it does not, they undermine the foundations of that narrative and makes it very easy for folks like us to reach, especially particularly as I was talking about before with our women, to reach our women about what is actually taking place in the world with a message of love and truth and hope and positivity and stability for their children and the safety of their children. So when they make these videos, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you take it to those folks who are still not sure about what side of the fence reality is on, but be aware of this. For many of these vagues, and of course this is going to be absolutely true for all anti-whites, this video, as outrageous and as contradictory to reality as it is, for many of these folks, for them, it is going to be somewhat true because they're living their lives in the anti-white narrative where every movie, every book they read, every television show they watch is this narrative where the white race is oppressing, exploiting, persecuting, etc. So for them, this is not that far of a leap for it to be a reality. Keep that in mind when you're talking with them, because you don't want to lose your cool the moment that they say, I don't know if this is, you know, this might not be very far off. It's not happening in reality. We know that. We know it's completely the antithetical to reality. But in their reality of the anti-white narrative, where fiction holds as truth, it is reality. So keep that in mind when you try to wake them up. But it's a disgusting piece of propaganda, and is intended at every stage of that video to inflict harm on us by moralizing the acts of harm against us and dehumanizing us, which makes people feel like they are free of the consequences, and whether they be external or internal, feeling guilt about harming us. So this is really despicable. There will be women raped because of this video. There will be people murdered. There will be people mugged and beaten, etc., because of this video. And they will cite those individuals inside of themselves and then outside if they have to make the arguments, videos like this, as the evidence for why they had to 15 jump on top of some white girl and beat the hell out of her and rape her, because look at what the white race does to our people.
Yes, and also that video, which does feature obviously quite graphic scenes, violence, not age restricted on YouTube. You know, you can anyone can view Riz Ahmed's video, unlike mine, which doesn't feature any graphic violence at all. So, you know, yet again, you can see the message that YouTube is helping to push out there. We've had another couple of super chats. Clown World Express said, "What's your opinion on the refugee photo shoot video on BitChute? Seen as it's a comedy sketch of your latest weekly video, did you find it funny or were you offended?" Clown World Express makes good videos on BitChute. What he's really saying is he'd like a shout out, so I'm giving you one. After the show, Google refugee photo shoot BitChute. His channel is called Clown World Express. Thank you for the €5 and keep up the good work, my friend. But you don't have to beat around the bush. You can just ask for the shout out. Lutz Zero gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. He says, "Hey guys, a friend of mine that works in the private sector says that his company has teamed up with the CDC and have a vaccine formula for the coronavirus, and say if it's a success, the vaccine can be ready in the masses by the end of April." Well, that's very interesting. We'll see if that comes about. We have more questions too. Adam says, "Thoughts on Trevor Phillips being kicked out of the Labour Party?" Well, I found this really interesting because the guy's clearly anti-white. And if you look at his his recent speech, he made a speech at a university somewhere where he said that the whole system needed tearing down because it's basically a white patriarchy is what he said. So he is anti-white. But it's very interesting that Trevor Phillips has been kicked out of the Labour Party. Or so it says. I didn't think he'd actually been kicked out. I thought he'd just been suspended. So I'm not sure if he has actually been formally kicked out. But the reason he's in trouble with the party is because, quite simply, what he said was that men of a certain group were grooming white girls. And it seems quite funny, really, because you've got the Tory party kicking anyone out that says anything about Zionists or Israel, and then you've got the Labour Party kicking anyone out that says anything about Muslims or Islamic State. So, yeah, very, very strange there. I think it's very odd they kicked him out, but it is very telling because Labour is getting huge numbers of votes from the particular ethnicity that Trevor Phillips insulted, or well, didn't really insult, just told the truth about. That would be more accurate. So I think this is a real political move by them to lay down the law that ultimately Labour will never, ever criticise the Muslim community because it relies too much on them now in terms of votes, political power and block voting. What's your thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, so I know Trevor Phillips, he was the guy that coined the term Islamophobia. So he's kind of sowed his own downfall, really. But like you said, it's a really sad time, isn't it? Where you've got the two biggest political parties in the United Kingdom. Like you say, in one party, you can't criticize Islam. And in the other party, you can't criticize Israel or Judaism. So it's really quite remarkable. And like you said, he hasn't actually said anything that even the media could deem to be racist or anything. All he said is the truth about Pakistani grooming gangs. And I know, I think one of the Labour, I think it was a former cabinet officer, Khalid Mahmood, he's come out and said, you know, this is a bit harsh, but this is the environment that the establishment have created, where anybody that says anything remotely near the truth is automatically demonized, booted out suspended from the party and treated like a second class citizen. So it's really quite remarkable, isn't it, to see the extent that the political class will go to. I mean, where do we go from here? Is this another issue of free speech? I think it is. But ultimately, you know, we don't have free speech in this country, even though, you know, apparently we're told that we do. It doesn't exist. People are being taken to court for saying things to people. People are being suspended from the party. And like you said, you know, Labour seem to be pandering to a certain community, and that's where they put all their eggs in that basket. And that's what they're trying to do. So obviously they're towing the Islamic line by removing Phillips from the party. But, you know, Perhaps is it karma for coming up with the word Islamophobia? You've been bitten by your own word. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the coming weeks.
Jason, what's your thoughts?
Nothing to add except how pathetic have we become as a people that we have the major parties, and it's essentially you can't say anything negative about Muslims on one side and you can't say anything negative about Jews on the other. And that's what's the two power holders. How just repulsive have we need to recapture our destiny, become a people again. These are signs of absolute white noir, of absolute sickness. Let's get active, folks.
Okay, and we've got another question here. This one's from Aunt Sally, and she asks, Mark and No White Guilt, your thoughts on the revelations in C.J. Bajerkin's, how do you pronounce his name? C.J. Bajerkin's book referenced the Austrian painter. Now, I saw there was a debate on Adam Green's channel between Dennis Wise and this Christopher J. Bajerkin's, or however you pronounce his name. To be honest, I rarely say this. I don't want to be confrontational with anyone, but that C.J. Bajerkin's is an absolute moron. He just makes things up. He is the definition of a conspiracy theorist. He's an absolute liar. The things he says are baseless. He's written a book, an awful book. he spouts lies. He's not welcome on this show. I don't know why Adam Green has anything to do with him whatsoever. And as far as I'm concerned, the man is just peddling nonsense and really helping to perpetuate rubbish about a group of people who fought back against the Zionist system. I'm absolutely at a loss to why anyone would entertain that man. And as far as I'm concerned, he'll never be invited on this show. And no one who has anything to do, no one who really has any common sense should really interact with him at all. What are your thoughts on this absolute nonsense, Jason?
I don't even know what he ended up saying, but he sounds like a charming fellow.
Yeah, well, that's how he should be treated. That's how he should be treated. He should be treated as a complete and utter clown, as a sideshow. I think there's people out there and they adopt bizarre positions simply because no one else has adopted that position. So they think, if I come out with a load of nonsense, you know, I can actually influence a few, because somebody's going to believe it. It's like I went down the flat earth rabbit hole before, and before I ended up finishing watching a few of these really terrible videos on how the earth is allegedly flat, I actually found a theory about hollow earth, claiming that the earth is in fact hollow, and inside the earth there's all these little, like, gremlins and goblins and, you know, a special place with UFOs and aliens, and it's amazing. But some people were like, wow, this is spot on. You know, there were people in the comments going, oh my gosh, you know, this is incredible. This theory's blown my mind. You know, the government have been hiding it. Yeah. And the Way of the World summed this up. He just said, the quest for the hottest take really does make clowns out of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, there are people who will say anything in order to get an audience. And, you know, at the end of the day, they might be talking about, oh God, the David Icke questions come up now. People are saying, David Icke, not again, not again. Oh my gosh. You know, I was watching a David Icke, presentation the other day. Somebody sent it to me, and I do actually listen to the things people send to me. I do have a look at it. And he came, at first I could see a certain degree of what he was saying, but when he started claiming that Saturn was a giant satanic broadcasting station that was sending out frequency waves, which were, yeah, James is now completely confused. And then so was I. And at that point, I was completely lost. And it's at some point that I think when these people say things like that, it reduces everything to sort of clownery. And if you really want, you can make any case you like. And a lot of people make whatever case they want to make in order to simply feel relevant, that they're the only person making that case. And today with YouTube, you know, they've got a platform and there will be somebody who'll believe it, you know, whether it's hollow earth, whether it's flat earth, whether Saturn is Satan's personal BBC sending out electromagnetic waves to brainwash us all. And, you know, all of these things, they are actually happening according to these people. But in reality, you know, probably not. And I always say to people, if you're going to talk about something, especially something as important as what we're talking about, saving our people, always focus on things that you can absolutely prove. We can prove the Great Replacement. And you can prove that just by taking people for a walk around the East End of London. It's a place that, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago was absolutely full of indigenous people, and those people now have been replaced. It can be proved very easily. But when you see these people pushing things that are so fanciful and could not be proven, very, very strange. You know, it's just bizarre. Anyway, that's my talk on that. And, you know, the David Icke thing, I knew this would come up in the chat. As soon as I say anything about conspiracy theories, everyone just, the David Icke just fill the chat.
Isn't anyway, we've got Leicester, Mark.
What?
Isn't he from Leicester, the same as us, David Icke?
James, don't say that. It's gonna be like the Leicester. We're gonna be like the Leicester Mad Men, the three Leicester amigos. Hey, look, David Icke's a nice enough guy. I just, you know, and he is entertaining to a degree. And some of the things he says are very interesting. But when you start claiming Satan's personal broadcasting station, you know, very interesting. Yes. Anyway, Clown World Express gave another $5. Thank you very much. She said, sorry, Mark, my BitChute channel for the refugee photo shoot is Clown World Productions, and my Entropy account is Clown World Express. Sorry for the shameless plug. And keep up the good work. Yes, go to Clown World Productions. He does some very good work. And SP483 gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, what's next for Patriotic Alternative? We need a decent organization in this country. Again, well, myself and Laura will be doing a special stream about that very soon. I send out monthly updates and we'll go from there. And somebody said David Icke exposed the Zionists. Yes, he does. He says some good things about them, but he also says some nonsense claiming other things. And, you know, I just think we should, we should stick to the, you know, the demographics is what gets people involved. So that about brings us to the end of the show. And it has been a very, very good show. And first and foremost, I would like to thank James. James has been an excellent guest. It's been wonderful getting to know him and getting to know his personal story. And it's also been very good to have somebody on who's really given a great insight in the journey that they've gone from being a more of a civ now to being a, you know, a real nationalist. So James, before you leave us tonight, before we close the show, please tell us a little bit more about how we can get in touch with you, how we can follow you, and how my audience can support your excellent work. And obviously a bit, you know, anything you want to plug, like your upcoming court case, that would be great too.
Yeah. So if you would like to follow my work, you can head over to YouTube, type in James Goddard in the search bar, and you'll see my channel there. I'm also on Telegram at James, I think it's, yeah, James Goddard again, and also my website, which is www.jamesgoddard.org. So, yeah, if you would like to keep up to date with my work, we have been a bit quiet at the minute due to the conditions that I'm currently under. So I'm in court next week for 3 days, and that's a private, in a private court because it's for my daughter. And 2 weeks after that, I am appearing at Wimbledon Magistrates Court in regards to hurty words to a far-left journalist. So if there is anybody that's in the London area and you'd like to come down and support us, you're more than welcome to come and join us. We'll be putting a video out in the coming days just to inform people what time and where they'll be meeting. And if not, just share our content, share the content about, and also please let as many people know as possible, because it's increasingly difficult to get a message out there when you're so restricted. Like I said, the only social media we've got is Telegram and YouTube. So hopefully they won't throw me in prison and I won't be having to buy chocolates for Leroy and Abdul. Hopefully I will be I'll be back out on the streets and informing people about this new message. So hopefully in the coming months we'll be talking demographics in Manchester, maybe even doing an Arndale protest and making sure as many people as possible are awake to the issues that we're facing. So I just want to thank you, Mark, for letting me come on tonight, and also Jason as well. I've really enjoyed it, and I have to say it's been an interesting journey from our first chat back in December to now all three of us appearing on the same show on the same side. It's a good feeling. So I want to thank you both for being so welcoming and so helpful, really. And everybody in the chat tonight, there's been some really nice comments and some really supportive comments. And I think I've definitely made the right decision. And like I say, I don't know everything. I'm learning each day. If there is any literature or any videos that people think I should see, then please email me at thejamesgoddard@gmail.com. I don't have an ego or anything like that. I'm always willing to learn and I'm always willing to listen. So yeah, thank you for having me on this evening.
Thank you. And the last entropy poll tonight was, Are you a shape-shifting lizard? One person said yes, whereas the rest all said, please don't expose me. So who knows? Who knows how many shape-shifting lizards we have watching this very show? Anyway, Jason, thank you for, as always, being here with us tonight. Please, where can we support your work? And again, give TAP a big plug.
Yes, well, it's been fantastic being with the both of you, as it always is to be fantastic with you, Mark, and fantastic with this magnificent audience of heroes that we have here going free and taking the message of love and virtue, nationalism to our people around the world. Thank you all for the work that you are doing for Going Free. It means a great deal to me. Now, in 30 minutes, just 31, or actually 30 minutes and some odd seconds, we are going to be tapping right into an artist extraordinaire, Donald Kent, and also known as American Zarathustra. That'll be over on my channel, No White Guilt, here on YouTube, also on Gardening with NWG on YouTube. So we look forward to seeing you all in just 30 short minutes. Last thing I'll say is the reason why people believe these outrageous things is because of something that I call Tertullian's glitch. It's something weird about the mind, especially with our people. And it goes like this, credo qui absurdum. I believe because it is absurd. And so that is the reason why we are questioned about whether or not we're shape-shifting lizards. But it's wonderful to be with you all. Thank you so much for being here, James. Look forward to seeing wonderful things from you. And I pass it back over to our great leader and extraordinaire, by the way, Mark Collett.
Well, thank you, Jason. And thank you, James. And thank you for all the people who, every time we talk about conspiracies, derail the chat and make me talk about shape-shifting lizards. It's always the highlight of my show when we end up talking about the lizard people. Yes, I think that is always what makes my week. It does definitely give me a laugh. Well, look, thank you, James. Thank you, Jason. And finally, I'd just like to say, I did mention that Unwashed isn't able to do his regular stream in his regular place. So please make sure you go and give him a little bit of support, because after all, it isn't nice being in the YouTube gulag. Now, my regular video will be back on Friday. And of course, we will be back on Wednesday. Now, in the next few weeks, we have some very, very good guests. We have the lads from the Absolute State of Britain. We have Edward Dutton. I am hoping to do a special stream on Friday evening about the state of patriotic alternative with Laura. And I'm also trying to secure Millennial Woes for an episode of PWR 2. Now, that just leaves me to say thank you to everyone. Thank you, James. Thank you, Jason. And of course, thank you to all the people who donated so very generously tonight. If you want to make a donation after the show, you can use Entropy, you can send Bitcoin, or you can write to me at Mark at the Fall of Western Man. And remember, if you need any help, or if you would like to have correspondence with me, the best place to reach me is at that email address. I always attempt to answer all emails that I receive. So thank you very much. But as always, the biggest thank you of the night goes to the audience. You guys have been absolutely wonderful as always, and I love you all. So before we go, I'd just like to say, do be safe. We have talked about the coronavirus. We have talked about whether it's going to be as big as some people predict or whether it might just pass, and thankfully, most people will get through this absolutely fine, but we don't know. So please be safe. Please take precautions. Please make sure that you look after other people in your community as well. Look after your friends. Keep an eye out for each other in these very, very interesting and potentially dangerous times. So thank you so much. Look after yourselves. Have a great evening. And I will see you all next week for another episode of PWR. Enjoy the rest of your evenings. Good night, guys.
Civilizations die from suicide, not by murder. That quotation comes from historical.